This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. For the past year, expanded federal immigration enforcement and two fatal shootings of protesters by federal agents in Minnesota have sent ripples of anxiety throughout the country. While the St. Louis area hasn't seen the kind of large-scale enforcement actions that have occurred elsewhere, local community leaders, educators, and small business owners say fear and misinformation are shaping daily life. Families are staying home, students are missing school, and rumors of immigration raids are spreading quickly online. My St. Louis Public Radio colleagues Brian Munoz and Hiba Ahmed have been looking into these local efforts, and they join me now to talk about it. Hiba and Brian, thank you, and welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So Brian, what was it that first interested you in doing this coverage? Was there a tipping point for you?
Yeah, so my interest in exploring this topic was really sparked by conversations that I had had with both my own family and friends. As a Hispanic man, you know, this is very much on top of mind. I'm an American citizen. I was born here. But still, you know, it was these constant rumors that I think I also saw on social media. I am a frequent Redditor. And, you know, almost every day someone was posting, oh, I think I saw ICE, or I saw this unmarked car, or something. It was like, yeah, people are just getting freaked out by all this. I wonder if there's any validity in what this is doing also to immigrant advocates and those that are trying to chase these nonstop tips down.
Mm-hmm. Hey, but how about for you?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm a daughter of immigrants. I was born in the U.S., but I mean, this is definitely top of mind, I think, for any of us who identify as immigrants or people of color, to be quite honest. But yeah, I mean, we were getting tips. I was getting tips from sources saying that, you know, we heard of a raid here or heard of a raid there. And it was clear that this was definitely on people's minds, and especially through the lens of education, people are worried about the kids, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, it was definitely, that's how we, Brian and I kind of came together and said, okay, maybe we need to take a closer look.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've done some reporting on this in Overland, Hiba,
mm-hmm.
and that is part of the Ritchener School District, and that is in North St. Louis County.
Yeah.
Why did you start that reporting?
Yeah, so there, Ritchener is a ever-diversifying school district, probably the most rapidly diversifying school district here in the St. Louis region. You know, about a quarter of its population, student population, identifies as Hispanic or as an English language learner. And what's interesting here is that, like, we've heard probably some of the most as close to legitimate tips that we've received have come from this region, from Overland.
Mm-hmm.
And when we started to reach out to school officials, they were saying, yes, this is definitely having an impact here on our district and our student mm-hmm. population.
You spoke with Ritchener Superintendent Chris Kilbride, and mm-hmm. he told you this.
This is absolutely fomenting fear. It's causing students, some, to stay home from school. To miss the education that they're entitled to. And that's the obstacle, the new obstacle that we've been dealing with.
So Superintendent Kilbride said some students are staying home.
Mm-hmm.
Do we know what that translates to in real attendance numbers?
Yeah, so that's a 5% drop in attendance among Hispanic or English language learner students just in the month of January, so this past month. And that is pretty tangible for a population. It's a pretty significant portion of their overall student population, which is just over 6,000 students. And it's also showing up, for example, they have a food pantry that they run at the center of their district. And, you know, Dr. Kilbride shared that, like, you know, they've seen a drop in attendance of people coming to the food pantry, and he believes that's because people are scared to drive to get access to groceries and food because, you know, there are concerns about being stopped while driving around in the community.
Mm-hmm. And how is the school district dealing with this, Hiba? You know, what the superintendent characterized as an obstacle.
Yeah, so the big point that Dr. Kilbride mentioned was that, you know, they are getting calls coming in, you know, about six per day. And that's coming into their district office, but also to their directly into their schools. And that looks like, you know, basically what they do is they answer the calls and they try to just make sure that, hey, is this person safe? Do they have a student enrolled in the district? Does that student have all the needs that they need, basically, to be able to, you know, attend school and to thrive. So food, shelter, you know, an adult that is looking after them. And then oftentimes, Dr. Kilbright said, is that they're just offering a ear to listen, right? Mm-hmm. People are scared and want their fears listened to. So that's kind of the primary role at this point. But they are very much in a reactive state. It's really difficult for them to, you know, verify these claims, right? They're a school district.
There, it sounds like there would also be then a significant feeling of overwhelm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Definitely. And I think that overwhelm is both among students, families, the teachers and the staff who are charged with educating these children day in and day out, but also making sure that the kids are safe and happy.
Mm-hmm. What is the effect on the learning day of all of this?
Yeah, Dr. Kilbright, I mean, explained in pretty sharp terms that, you know, if a school receives a tip, it can cause the district or the school to basically grind to a halt from anywhere from 30 to 60 minutes because, you know, if a tip comes in or there are rumors, it usually means the students are probably also seeing it online or maybe it's starting to bubble around. So they're answering kids' questions, right? And kids are having a hard time focusing. Or a principal might have to, you know, get in touch with the district staff, right? Like Dr. Kilbright, to be like, hey, we got this tip. Now what? What do we do? Do you know anything? And it's basically what he says is it stops the learning. It stops the regular, you know, operations of a school day just so that they can make sure that everything is okay.
Mm-hmm. And this is K through 12.
Yeah.
I think, you know, understanding that is important too, because if we say kids and we imagine, yes, they're children,
yeah,
but we're also talking about middle schoolers and teenagers and just the
little ones too.
Yeah. The magnitude of all of this. Does the school district have plans in place if federal enforcement does show up there or if a child's parents or guardians are detained?
Yes, the district said that they have developed new plans. These were not necessarily plans that were in place, for example, during the previous Trump administration. So they have developed plans. They were, you know, of course, not keen on sharing the details for security purposes, but you know that they reemphasize that the focus is making sure that if they learn that a student's family has been detained, to make sure that that student is safe, is with a trusted adult, that student has the food and toiletries that they need, and that they are okay and that they can come back to school. You know, Dr. Kilbride was very clear about the fact that one of the safest places for students to be, and I hear this from educators all the time, is for students to come to school. That's where they get food. They have adults who are looking after them. They're with their peers. And of course, they are learning. Mm-hmm. So that's really a key point he drove home.
Yeah. On the note of little ones, you know, there's an image that I surmise most people have seen by now, and that is a 5-year-old Liam Conejo Ramos being detained by ICE in Minnesota. That is the photo that shows Liam wearing a backpack and a blue knitted bunny hat with long floppy ears. Mm. Now, Liam and his father are now back home in Minnesota after a U.S. district judge ordered their release. But I'd like to talk for a moment about how incidents like this, I mean, images like this, how they affect the way people feel, especially immigrants. Brian?
Yeah, I think this image is not perfect technically, you know, but it shows this young Liam Conejo Ramos, you know, being detained by immigration agents. He has his floppy blue hat on. And while not technically perfect, you know, as his life, this image, I think, really reiterates the importance of visual journalism and how it can shape public perception. There are folks more eloquent with words than I am about the analysis behind this image and why it's capturing the minds of so many people around the world. But it really reminds me of the image from the Vietnam War, Napalm Girl, which was an image depicting a young girl running naked towards a photographer after the Americans used chemical weapons, napalm, Agent Orange, to clear foliage around the Ho Chi Minh Trail in attempts to ID the Viet Cong supply route. And it was just this little girl running towards the photographer in agony. The photographer grabbed her, took her to receive medical care and whatnot. But it's this kind of searing image of the situation something that encapsulates the moment and the agony behind it. I think so many times when you see the news, and even outside of this immigration issue, you hear something happen, you can tune it out. I don't see it. I don't, you know, I maybe hear about it in passing. I don't have to think about it. But when you see the people going through this, you see how the situation is unfolding, I think that really leaves a long-lasting impression on folks. And I think, you know, the combination of these large ICE officers or immigration agents that whose faces you can't see in the image, they're cropped out, and this small boy getting, you know, led to a squad car, I think, you know, it's just one of those images that is going to be a defining mark for this moment.
And what you've been saying about not technically perfect, I think, is relevant to you especially because you are STLPR's visuals editor, and yet you don't set up for a picture like that. You take it, and the impact of images is really, it's so consequential. Hey, but what do you make not only of the image, but of the situation, and how it can evoke fear in people in this area, you know, far from Minnesota?
Yeah, I mean, I think the photo of Liam is something that has come up in many of my conversations with parents and educators in our community. And I think that there is a sense of familiarity, right? We all know a Liam. We all know a kindergartner who wears a floppy hat and wears a backpack to school, right? And I think that's what resonates with a lot of people, is that this is just a very regular kid that was photographed in extraordinary circumstances. And I think that's what has resonated with people. And I think people, you know, when they see kids in particular get caught in the crossfire of a lot of you know, these big political actions we're seeing across our country, that's where I think people tend to really pay attention. Mm-hmm. And you know, Dr. Kilbride mentioned that as well, is that, you know, these immigration enforcement operations happening in other places, again, like we said, it's not happening at that scale in St. Louis. But it does have a ripple effect. It is absolutely impacting the children of our community.
Mm-hmm. I'm talking with STLPR journalists Hiba Ahmed and Brian Munoz. We need to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll continue this conversation about the past year's federal immigration enforcement across the country and how fear those actions have evoked is affecting people in the St. Louis area. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Welcome back. Let's return to our conversation with STLPR's Hiba Ahmed and Brian Munoz. We're talking about the ways federal immigration enforcement that's been dramatically ramped up in the past year by the Trump administration has affected people in the St. Louis area. Now, before the break, we were talking about Ritner School District and about the hotline and calls that are coming into the district. And there's another hotline in the St. Louis community, and it's called the Rapid Response Line. Brian, you spoke with Sarah Ruiz, the executive director of the ASHRAE Foundation, and this foundation helps people, or helps support, that is, the Rapid Response Line. And here's what she told you.
I think we knew in January of last year what was coming. Many of us were in this work during the last Trump administration and several other administrations prior, but we knew this time that the promises that were made were going to be realized. And so we had a much more sort of clear and direct understanding what we could expect, and that enabled us to create a much more unified and coordinated plan to prepare and respond to that.
Brian, tell us about this plan that's been mentioned.
Yeah, I think what you're seeing among advocacy groups in the St. Louis region and beyond are folks trying to find ways to support people caught in kind of the crosshairs in various facets. When somebody is detained by federal immigration agents, whether they're an American citizen, as we've seen recently, or they're in the U.S. without legal status, there are ripples that go off of that, you know, that impact kids. Sometimes these are mixed status families where the children are citizens and were born in this country. And advocates are really looking to find ways to support beyond, I think, you know, just watching and trying to see where there is immigration enforcement activity locally. So, I mean, in terms of a plan, things are multifaceted and always changing, but I think always rooted in trying to find ways to support these community members.
Mm-hmm. Can you walk us through how this hotline actually works?
Yeah. So the hotline, which is, you can find it online, but people can call in and it's essentially a two-prong system. You can direct your call towards reporting ICE activity or activity around federal immigration enforcement. Folks are suggesting that that's verified. Maybe you saw it firsthand. But the other prong is if you've been detained or a loved one has been detained and you need assistance, whether legal or you just are trying to figure out what to do next kind of thing. And the hotline is manned by volunteers. So, I mean, those are kind of the two main ways the hotline works. Different volunteers, different organizations are kind of tackling each side of it.
Mm-hmm. And how many people and organizations are involved with this?
Yeah, there's a handful of local organizations spearheading this. The Ashray Foundation, as I mentioned. Also, the MICA Project, Manos Unidas, which is a mutual aid group that started up around this time last year that I've reported on before. Lifewise STL was involved as well. All in all, after speaking to a few of the volunteers and coordinators, I mean, they described hundreds of people overall donating, volunteering, whether it's attorneys giving legal advice, trying to do intake forms, or folks just, hey, I'm going to jump in my car and go try to verify some of the rumors that we're getting.
Mm-hmm. Hey, but how does the rapid response hotline compare with the hotline that you were talking about or that you learned about mm-hmm. at Rittner School District? I mean, are there some key differences or similarities to point out?
Yeah, so the Rittner School District has a safe line, which has been around for some time, where anytime a community member sees something unsafe regarding the school district or a school building or anything to do with the schools or in their community, right, they can call it in. And what Rittner officials have said is that, you know, if rather than calling a school directly or even us at the district office, go ahead and dial this safe line. And again, try to, if you're going to share something related to an ICE sighting, please try to make sure that it's not just, you know, something you saw on Reddit or something you saw in a Facebook group, but rather like something you saw with your own eyes or some sort of verifiable information, including like location, were there agents present, what was going on, you know, and the time and the place. And so that it'll get called in to this particular safe line. So it operates in a very similar way, I think, to the hotline that Brian was talking about, but maybe just a little bit more concentrated to the community that the Rittner School District serves.
Mm-hmm. Brian, to return to the rapid response line, you spoke with a volunteer named Emily Stewart. Let's hear a little of what she told you.
You know, reiterating unconfirmed or unverified sightings, it instills a level of fear in the community that is both traumatizing and redirects them from what the actual potential risk is. You know, a strategy of people staying in their homes for the next 3 years is not a strategy. They deserve a quality of life. They need to be able to work. Their children need to be able to go to school. They need to be able to get groceries from the grocery store. So as much as people want to, you know, step up and accompany people in those situations, providing rides to children to school or dropping groceries off, that's super helpful. And it allows people to continue to live with a quality of life that they deserve and that we would expect for anyone in our community.
So there's that old adage, Brian, if you see something, say something. But can you put a finer point on what people with the rapid response line are saying? Like, when should people call?
Yeah, so there is an acronym that advocates have been sharing around recently, and that's SALUTE. If you see something with your own two eyes, make sure you're noting the size of the response. You know, is there one ICE-marked vehicle? Is there many? You know, is there unmarked vehicles? What does that look like? The activity, like, do you see people busting down someone's door, you know, at their house, location, where, uniform, or like the agency involved. So, you know, do you see Homeland Security investigations across the back of their jackets? Do you see a local police department or a sheriff's department patch on their shoulder? The time it happened and like what equipment do they have? I mean, are they coming in with guns drawn? A lot of time, some of these reports have actually been the U.S. Marshals executing a warrant. And that's not necessarily federal immigration enforcement, but people have been reporting it as such. And folks are just saying, please, if you report something, have it be something that you saw with your own two eyes, or you have very clear video with as much of this information as possible.
Mm-hmm. Emily Stewart is a volunteer. What is motivating people to volunteer their time and their energy in this way?
Yeah, I think, you know, each volunteer has their own reasons for why they do this work. I think people are motivated by the way that they've seen this ramp up in enforcement happen across the country, seeing what's going on in the streets of Minneapolis and suburban Chicago, for example, and not wanting the same to happen in their community. And these rumors that we've been reporting on and kind of touch on all these aspects have been really driving more folks to get involved and help kind of quash those, you know, rumors if they're not true. But I think it's folks really wanting to help one another while not impeding on legal enforcement efforts, but making sure that, you know, everyone is doing what they're supposed to.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to go to Cherokee Street in South St. Louis. We mentioned in the introduction that this ramping up of immigration enforcement efforts around the country has had ripple effects, and that includes in our business communities here. And you talked with Anna Vasquez, Brian. She is the owner of Diana's Bakery on Cherokee Street, which has been in business now for nearly 20 years. And she told you in Spanish about this issue.
Ha impactado en el negocio porque han dicho que aquí en la Cherokee ha estado varias veces, las cuales yo que estoy aquí no he sido testiga de ninguna de las patrullas de ellos aquí en la Cherokee. Mas sin en cambio, no puedo decir que sea cierto o falso.
So she tells me that it's impacted her business because she's gotten calls over the last year, several points saying, hey, I heard ICE is on Cherokee. I heard there were raids on Cherokee. And she said, I've been here, but since I've been here, I haven't seen that with my own two eyes. I can't tell you if it's true or false, but I know I've gone up and down Cherokee several points for the last year. I live in South City, and I've not seen it with my own two eyes, but the fear is still there. And I think that fear is also personified, I think, in the clients that she's spoken to.
Bueno, con la mayoría de los clientes que hemos hablado, y digo hemos hablado porque es junto con los empleados, ellos tienen miedo al salir a casa, salir de compras, simplemente ir al médico o ir a las escuelas de sus hijos porque con el temor de no volver a regresar.
She says, with the majority of clients we've talked to, well, I say we because of who my employees have talked to as well, they're afraid of leaving home, going shopping, simply going to the doctor, going to their kids' schools because of the fear of not returning. And I think that's something that Dr. Kilbride echoed as well, is people are just afraid to get in their cars and live day to day, you know, because of all of this. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, Anna really closed out by saying, I just hope that the government can stop sowing so much fear. You know, if you're going to do enforcement, but there are ways to do this while still treating people as humans and not instilling fear into even, you know, folks with citizenship and have legal status. And at this point, she's just looking forward to the midterms.
What is your biggest takeaway, each of you, in just 15 seconds from this reporting that you've done, Hibbert?
The fear is real and it's tangible and it's having a real impact. It shows up in the attendance numbers in schools and it's impacting businesses. But at the same time, we just really want to reiterate that level of enforcement that we're seeing in places like Minneapolis and Chicago is just not something that we've been able to confirm here.
Mm-hmm. Brian?
Immigration enforcement is happening here. It's been happening here. Mm-hmm. Those fears aren't unjustified. But I think you're seeing the community step up and support one another in more ways, I think, than what we've seen in the past.
Mm-hmm. Brian Munoz is SDLPR's visuals editor, and Hiba Ahmed is the education reporter for St. Louis Public Radio. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hiba and Brian's latest story is titled Rumors Drive Fear in St. Louis as Trump's immigration plans turn deadly in Minneapolis. You can find it on our website. That's stlpr.org.
Today's episode was produced by our executive producer, Alex Hoyer.
With production assistance from Lila Halilbashich.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Doerr.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.